Welcome back to Amplifying Us. This is a place where we'll connect you to women who have braved, survived, and have learnt to embrace the power of their feminine leadership. And we'll see what happens as a result. Finding purpose and belonging, the confidence and the courage to act isn't always easy. My next guest, Linda McDonald, grew up on a farm in New Zealand, but you would definitely say she is now a global citizen. Her work has taken her to 5 continents. She collaborates with farmers and ministries of agriculture, from the smallest to the largest dairy farms in the world. Her current role for Tetra Lavelle sees her supporting African farmers connect to market and increase production, improving outcomes for individuals, families, and communities. Today we're going to talk about who she is and how deeply understanding her why, her what, and her how allows her to be resilient and be at peace in a world that is full of pace. Welcome back to Amplifying Us. And today I am talking to Linda McDonald, Kiwi, but not living in New Zealand at the moment, living in Stockholm. So good morning from New Zealand and good evening from Stockholm, Linda. Lovely to see you.
Good evening. Really nice to be here with you, Lindy. Thank you for inviting me.
Let me start by asking you who you are. And I know you've got a unique way, which I think is absolutely delicious, of introducing yourself.
So I've been introducing myself like this for a few years now when I've been doing conferences and speaking with people. So I thought maybe it's appropriate to do the same for this podcast. So I just want to share with you who I am, because I think that's infinitely more important than what I've done. So I'm going to talk about it in terms of my core values. So my core values of who I am and what I stand for. Like Simon Sinek says, any organization needs to know why they do what they do and how they do it in order to find, you know, the way that those wheels turn in an organization. But I think that we need to know why we do what we do and how we do it from a personal perspective as well, so that we can not only be successful, but so that we can find our peace and find our way in this world. So my core values of why I do what I do and how I do it are curiosity. That's why I do everything, because I'm an insatiable learner and I want to find out why things work. When I was living in China, my trainees, they were hilarious, Mary and Ling Ling, they said to me one day, "You are like our 3-year-old toddler. You're always asking why this and why that." And I think that's one of the coolest compliments I've ever had in this life. So that's why I do everything, because I'm curious. And what I do is creating positive change and communication and collaboration. And how I do it is with integrity and kindness.
And you explaining that to me is 100% authentic and has integrity, because that absolutely sums up the you I know, who I probably met around 8 or 9 years ago and have followed your career, because you've been living out of New Zealand now for about 7 years.
Yeah, that's right. I have.
Yeah. And currently have a really, really big role with Tetra Lavelle in helping build prosperity, actually at a family level, at a community level, and at a national level through building sustainable food chains. So can we start there and hear a little bit about what you're doing right now?
So you've nailed it, really. I mean, I don't even need to explain it any further.
Well,
what I'm doing is building exactly that. It's agricultural development at grassroots level. So The key around what we're doing is providing market access. So within Tetra Lavelle, who I work for, we are we're a part of the Tetra Lavelle group, which is obviously part of Tetra Pak. Tetra Pak is part of that. So Tetra Pak partner with local customers who have a manufacturing facility who process milk. So in order for them to develop markets and build a sustainable supply chain, they need to have the market development at grassroots level, at family level, at the cow level. So that's where we come along. We provide the knowledge and the education and the practical understanding of how to improve milk production, how to improve milk quality. And we do that, you know, taking, say, a family that has one cow, taking them from producing 4 or 5 litres per cow to 8 to 10 litres per cow, and then eventually up to 15 or 20 litres per cow. So we're building the production at that real grassroots level. So once a family has, say, more than 4 or 5 litres of milk production, they've got more than enough to feed their family. Therefore, they have some extra that they can sell. So one of the real challenges with aid programs and development at that level, when we're building the knowledge in milk production, is what do we do with that milk once we've produced it? And this is where I say market access is key. And it's key in agricultural markets, wherever you are in the world, whether we're talking about market access locally for a local family farmer in Kenya, or whether we're talking about New Zealand markets globally, market access is the key, locally and globally. And we have to build resilience and stability into our market systems in order to create like a really sustainable market structure. So by partnering with our Tetra Pak customers, we actually provide that stability in the market access. So we work with them to provide milk collection centres, and that's working out, you know, and I've just been doing this today, actually. I was working with our customer in Tanzania, and we were looking on Google Maps, I was looking down in Tanzania at where the milk collection centres are, and we were looking at the roads. So is this road paved? Is it okay for a truck to have access to? Or is it only suitable for motorbikes to go down? Because when we know that, then we can figure out, you know, what kind of transport we need to go and collect the milk and how our extension offices will go and support the local farmers. So it all comes down to the infrastructure available and where we actually place these collection centres. But I digress a little bit.
Let's come back to, because what I found fascinating was the massive difference that it makes at an individual level. So at 4 to 5 litres of production of milk, we're only just feeding our families. As soon as we start to lift that, then we start to have access ourselves and be able to purchase better food. And then as we lift that, we can educate our children. And if that includes women, young girls, what we know is the better education that young girls can have, then that lifts families out of repeatable poverty. You don't have children at such a young age if the mother is educated. So in essence, what you're doing is kind of really saving the world, which is no surprise to me because you're a pretty remarkable woman. So it really makes such a profound difference, the idea of literally increasing the production of a cow. And you were talking to me about essentially little simple things like 24-hour access to water for the cow or putting it in the shade. So you're not, you know, going in there with massive genetics or completely transforming the local system of how they feed their cows. You're literally giving them some really basic advice.
Yeah, it's really the simple things that we start with. So first of all, having 24/7 access to water, making sure that the cows are not tied up in the sunlight, that they're in the shade. And then we look at what they're getting fed. And it might be simply changing the way that they're being fed, adding a little bit of concentrate here and there, and putting in some basic technical expertise in so that they can use the resources that they have in a better way. So it's not about adding any cost. Basically, all the recommendations that we come with are practical and shouldn't cost them any more money. So just like you say, once they've got that production up, then they start selling to the processor, and then that processor then needs to have people to work within the factory. So it creates jobs at that processor level. So we're providing more jobs there for the community. So the processor then buys the milk from the family. So once they get more money in, I mean, the very first thing that uh, a, a family will spend their money on when they come out of poverty is better quality food, better quality protein. So that's, you know, eggs, meat, fish, all types of protein, and dairy is a big part of that. So at all levels, we also do school milk programs. So we partner with local governments, and the local governments can use the products that we're developing at grassroots level. So we have a local sustainable product there. And then we put that in as nutrition school feeding programs into the schools. So of course that helps with all of those good things, like you just mentioned before, keeping kids in school. We've got some stats that show we can increase attendance rates, like 50-80% sometimes. Dropout rates improve considerably. And there's some research that shows that if you invest $1 into a school feeding program, you get easily $3 back in terms of the societal gain, in terms of education and health and all of those good things later on. But it can be up to $20 return. So it's an incredible investment into society, putting in a school feeding program. And it's like a circular economy, because it's all linked back to development at grassroots level. So that market access is really key to pulling the whole communities out of that subsistence poverty and building them up, right? It's literally the cash cow.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that idea. And it changes our perspective, because the whole idea of dairy is you know, it's under threat in certain parts of our society, and the benefit of a cow to the world. Mm. And sometimes we have to come back and think about half the world who may have a cow, that is how they survive. And
yeah,
they have a right, like the rest of us, to get ahead in life and gain prosperity for themselves, for their families, to improve their lifestyle. So Kiwi girl in Stockholm doing this amazing thing. What I'd love to talk to you about is, when you started out as a young woman in New Zealand, did you see yourself having this global influence? Because you have had global influence, not only in the role you're doing now, but the role you did in Asia. And so how did Linda McDonald, Kiwi girl, get to be this big influencer at a global level? And I know that's really going to embarrass you.
It really does. I never could have dreamt or thought that I would be in this situation 20 years ago. So I guess the answer to your question, Lindy, is all I have done is taken the opportunities and the challenges that were presented to me at the time. I've tried to be present and focused and in the moment, and to just to work with what is rather than what might be. Although I didn't really recognize that I was doing that at the time, as I've become more self-aware and more conscious and more spiritual, I have looked back and reflected and seen that that's what I've been doing. And I try to make that a point right now of just being in the moment and looking at whatever comes, rather than trying to plan out a path, because you know as well as I do that the best laid plans never come to action.
So this sounds like a mature Linda, not a young girl, Linda. What was that point that you thought, I'm really working really hard here, and maybe this is not sustainable for me? Was there a moment where you thought, actually, I have to change things a little bit, because this journey you're on could be very overwhelming? And if you didn't take care of yourself, both mentally, physically, and spiritually, it would become all-encompassing, I imagine.
100%. And I distinctly remember the day that that happened. It was 2012. I was my best friend had just died from suicide about 2 months earlier. I was full-time studying an MBA, executive MBA, and I was basically 2IC operations manager in Delavan, New Zealand. And I had a moment where everything just broke and I was crying in my office, couldn't handle things anymore, because it just one little thing had just become too much. It was like the straw that broke the camel's back. And one of my team came in, and wonderful man, he'd actually been in the Falklands War. So he'd been really really high in the military there. And he said to me one thing, he said, you know, Linda, stop spinning so many plates. He said, people only remember the plates that you drop. They don't remember how many plates you're spinning. Just stop spinning so many. Mm. Spin the plates that you're spinning well and keep them spinning, but don't drop any. And then my manager at the time, really incredible woman, some of you listening might know Zelda de Villiers, and she was the CEO of the Women in Dairying Network for a long time. Zelda and I had a chat, and we talked about resilience, and you know, she drew me a graph, and you can imagine this, resilience levels on one axis, mm-hmm. and time on the other. And you know, she drew a bit of a bumpy graph of life and life happenings. And then she drew a straight line across and said, this is basically your resilience bucket. When your bucket's full, you've got enough resilience in your bucket to be able to cope with all of life's happenings. But when your bucket is empty, like my bucket was clearly empty after having gone through a shock of a sudden grief and suicide, and by coming to the completion of my MBA and working full time as well, my bucket just wasn't full. So my coping levels were down. So Zelda basically gave me strict rules. I wasn't allowed to work more than 50 hours a week. And she gave me challenges of filling my bucket every week. So she said, you know, I needed to eat well, to sleep well, to read books, to go dancing with my friends, and just to take time out to start exercising and going for walks. And that was one of those pivot moments in terms of building my resilience and recognizing it. And having had that experience now, I can recognize it myself when this is happening. But this is going to be one of my lifelong challenges of looking after myself, you know, eating well, sleeping well, moving enough, breathing. When the going gets tough, these are the foundations that we really need to be functioning well that give us that resilience. So if we don't have enough in our resilience buckets, then those cracks start to show.
So how do you see that? In reflect back on your life and your learnings, and then in some of the cultures that you're working in, how do you see that transferring? Are people more resilient or sustainable when they have less?
That's such an interesting question. And yes and no. I would say I've some of the most resilient people I know have nothing. But also some of the most resilient people I know have many things, but they come from situations of such adversity and such hardship and challenge in their daily life that they need to build that resilience in order to cope. So that sometimes the systems under which they live I'm saying this when I'm talking about some of my colleagues in Russia or the Middle East and Saudi Arabia. They are some of the most resilient people I know, because they know that things are not always rosy. Things do not always work.
So a little bit of challenge can help that resilience, because you put things in place. But of course, if you don't have food and you're hungry, well, that's very hard to actually
Course. And it all comes back to survival. You know, we've got to, first of all, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we have to have Absolutely. What we need for survival first before we can really start looking at what we do after that.
So you've worked all around the world, and particularly in Asia. You lived in China for 5 years, was it? Or?
3 years I lived in China, and then
you've
then
worked
moved to Sweden.
Yeah, so you've worked with different people, different cultures, and you haven't flown in and out. You've literally lived with, you know, within different cultures, different societies. What have you learned about people?
We're all the same. humans are humans. You know, we breathe the same air. We have the same blood and DNA pulsing through our veins. We all want the same things. We all want peace. We all want human connection. Mm. We all want a better life. We all want the knowledge and the tools to be able to support ourselves and our families, to provide that for our communities. Most humans really are focused on personal development and professional development, community development, economic development, sustainability. We really are all the same. We might speak different languages. We might be educated in different systems. Ultimately, we are one.
I think that is very true. And if we look at some global leadership that's happening now in the world, some of our leaders would like to think that we're incredibly different. And yet it's that comes back to your values of positive change and connection and communication and your part that you play in that. And I think that's a really relatable story for most women in communities around the world. Are the people who are doing those things, creating that positive yeah. change, creating a sense of community, creating that sense of oneness?
Women bring so much to any kind of organization or relationship or system that they're involved in. And you are one of the global experts in this, Lindy. But, you know, women bring listening abilities, empathy, intuition, longer term perspectives. And one of the keys that we work with in terms of our agricultural development at grassroots level is that women are focused on doing the right thing, especially for their families. So if they have a dollar, they will invest it for the betterment of their family.
There are two things I want to pick up on that there, because you are so on the money, which is no surprise to me. One, women are focused on doing the right thing. And whether that is, a mum in Kenya who wants to educate, provide better food for her family, educate her daughter, whether that is a farmer in New Zealand or in Scotland or in America, focusing on dealing with doing the right thing around environment, with her own family, with her own community. So I think that's a real global strength of women. Coming on the back of that is that sense of, and it's one of the things that I'm kind of, it's my life passion, is helping women see their own potential around creating that change at family level, at community level, and the things that so hold them back. And so the next question I wanted to ask you is, how have you supported women grow their confidence and their influence, apart from obviously the work you do every single day, which is helping women who may own a cow to increase their livelihoods? So I'm thinking about career and the woman, the touch point for women that you come across all over the world, because I know you do this.
Yeah, I do. I mentor women throughout my organizations that I'm involved in, but also externally to that as well. And often it's that I'll have women come in and ask me if I can either officially or unofficially mentor them. And I most often say yes. What I have learned over the years is that if they really want it, they're going to be prepared to make an effort to set the time aside to make this happen, and then put in the hard yards and have the difficult conversations. I take difficult conversations with women and men, but I take difficult conversations with people when I see that they may be self-limiting in some way, and I can see that they could be doing better and they might be holding themselves back. Then I try and have a really open, honest, and I guess vulnerable conversation where I just acknowledge what I've seen and how it could possibly be different. And I share with it, because a lot of what I see is, you know, I see my younger self coming through in these things. And I want to help because I've been there before. And so I know that I can give a little bit of insight. And I've had the beauty of women helping me throughout my career by doing this. So I like to pay it forward in that sense.
I had that absolute deep sense when you were saying this. I was thinking, is this a reflection of your younger self?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And one other way that I like to do it is there's an organization called Kiva, www.kiva.org, K-I-V-A. And this is a microfinancing organization. So you can lend $25 to a person who might want to borrow money for a business, whether that's in agriculture or maybe they want to put it towards education or building a new part on their house or everything. But I make a point of putting a set amount of money every month into women in agriculture. So that's my way of supporting women as well.
And this is absolutely fascinating because not one guest that I have had on this podcast has not done that action in some way or shape or form. And so whether it's people like Teresa and I and Vicky who are, you know, looking at the larger end of that through CEO, yourself in the small end, I'm not sure if you listened to the podcast with Teresa Gatting, right from her first paycheck, she invested in women. And the investment in women is seriously going to change our globe. And that doesn't even need to be a financial investment. I think the investment in time and energy and connection and saying, sometimes when women doubt themselves and it feels overwhelming. And, you know, I really want to acknowledge you, Linda, for being that person for me. And even though we are in different time zones and different parts of the world, you know, I have to bless Facebook chat, which and the little green light that says you are online and you have that amazing ability to just ask me a question. And it usually starts with, how are you? And it's usually at a time when I'm going, yeah, I'm kind of feeling I don't have the energy to go on. And something that I know that you have developed, which I think has really increased your incredible effectiveness in the world, is, and let's just call it what it is, it's a deepened sense of spirituality or a connection or a knowing when you know, you're picking up some energy from people, which I think has been quite an amazing thing. And wondered if you wanted to talk about that a little bit, because it could be a little bit personal.
It's really personal, but I'm very happy to talk about it. There would have been a time in my life where I would not have talked about this, but I believe if you don't go within, you go without.
Nice, nice. Say more about that.
Well, I'm a big believer in meditation. And I have been, yeah, I started meditating probably, gosh, actually it was around the time of the first Christchurch earthquake. I distinctly remember that was when I started. And I sort of dabbled in it for a couple of years here and there. But nowadays it's a regular fixture in my life. It's an everyday thing. And it comes back to those resilience buckets that we were talking about before. It is really part of my resilience that I need to do this. But as an added bonus to this, it really has improved my connection spiritually. So it's built my intuition, my insight, my ability to make really good grounded decisions, and to, yeah, I guess I be more effective.
Yeah, because I think you pick that building. I absolutely just adore this. I'm probably rattling now, but if you don't go within, you go without is actually incredibly magical on so many levels. But what I see is that it's built your connectiveness to people and that, as you said, that intuition, or often women talk about a gut instinct for something. And I think the more at peace we are, the more we can spend time on really figuring out things and giving ourselves that time and space for being still and being present means we actually have a greater expression of the gift that we've got actually into the outer world. And that idea of going within, going without is so important on so many levels. It's also it's the growing of your own leadership when you start to understand just who you are, and who you are is how you're going to lead. So I'd love to wrap this podcast up by asking the question I ask everybody. It's 15 years from now, and we've kind of nailed food production systems, and food poverty has been severely reduced. What do we have to work on to get there?
We need to focus on doing the right things in the right way. I think COVID has exposed the fragilities and fractures in everything that we look at right now in relationships and systems and organizations, industries, nations, governments, regional leadership, global leadership. But it's also highlighted the good and the strengths of what's working and what we have to really guide us in this way as well at local and global levels. And I see COVID kind of like a frost. So whatever flourishes afterwards is what we give attention to or inattention to. And as leaders, it's our responsibility to ensure that it's the right crops and not the weeds that take hold. So we need to rebuild these systems and structures and organizations to give us the right foundations and pathways to lead us into the future. So we've got to continue to do what's right for the people, the land and the animals, but it all comes down to the people. Hei tangata, hei tangata, hei tangata. It is people, it is people, it is people.
Linda McDonald, thank you so much for taking the time this morning to talk to me, for the influence that you are having on the world. And we so look forward to seeing you back soon, sometime in New Zealand.
At the end of the year, it's my plan.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Lindy.
Wow, it always is a surprise where these podcast chats go, and Linda's was no exception. She really set me back with her, if we don't go within, we go without. That deeply resonated with me on so many levels. Being in the moment and not trying to plan too far ahead, working with what is rather than what could be, is such a powerful concept. I see and hear so many women hustling. It's almost become a badge of honour, pushing, moving at pace, particularly for entrepreneurs. Hustling rather than deeply quieting and allowing. It sounds like not only does it allow us peace and resilience, it actually builds the leadership capability we need. You can find out more about Linda on our website. If you'd like to hear about a particular topic or give us some feedback, we'd love to hear from you, either through the website or the Amplify in Us Facebook page. Haere rā, take care folks, and thanks so much for listening.